to go.
Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
At the theater, more than the movies come to life. Movie lovers march in and skip the line with digital tickets to the latest movies on the free Fandango app. Ready to grab some snacks.
Yippee! Pick me!
And head to the best seats in the house for a night of romance, terror, and quality family screen time. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
Welcome to the Football Morning in America mini podcast for week 7 of this NFL season. It is early Monday morning. I was in Atlanta for the Rams-Falcons debacle of a game, but I went to write about Jalen Ramsey and how the Rams are building their team and how trades in the NFL are really on the increase. Have some stats in the column about that. And just had a really interesting time down there, especially spending time with Rams COO Kevin Demoff and Rams general manager Les Snead, who pulled off the deals. I'm going to try something a little bit different in the mini pod today. I talked to Eric Weddle, the safety of the Rams, while I was in the locker room in Atlanta on Sunday, and I just thought I'd bring you 2 or 3 minutes, just a couple of questions, a couple of snippets from my conversation with Eric Weddle, and then I will get into the top of the column. So here's me in the locker room in Atlanta, a few lockers down from Jalen Ramsey, with veteran Rams safety Eric Weddle. So Eric, a few feet away, there's Jalen Ramsey. A few days ago, you had no idea he'd even be here. Tonight, he plays 36 snaps for you. What did you see in Jalen Ramsey out there?
Just the energy, the competitiveness, the confidence that he brings, not only on the field but on the sidelines, and how he intellectually, how smart he is to be able to come in on, you know, 3 days really, and be able to get in there and execute our calls and not really have any slip-ups. A lot of it, you know, I put on myself to make sure he's lining up and knows what we're doing and be able to communicate it.
It looked like mostly he played man today, and there were a few zone snaps it looked like. I don't know what you guys are doing out there.
Yeah. I mean, when we were in sub, I mean, it's a whole different dynamic when not only you bring a guy like Jalen, who's probably the best man cover corner in the league, but then you had Troy and Roby, who are press man players really at heart, and changes the whole dynamic of what you call in defense. We're bringing more pressure, we're bringing more combo coverages, roll coverages, that we're playing man, sticky coverage. So that's what happens when you bring a guy like Jalen in, and it affects the way quarterback. I mean, guys are getting jammed up off the line. It gives our rush time to get there, and, you know, it was a great debut for him.
Eric, thanks a lot.
Anytime, bro.
So, as I do every week, I'm going to read the lead to my column, then read some highlights to the column after that. And I look forward to hearing your reaction. Because, really, when I go to a place, I don't get to watch as much football of all the other games that I normally would like to do. And so it's always interesting to hear your reactions after a column like this. You know, I wish I could have watched some of the New Orleans-Chicago game. I just saw some highlights and some lowlights of Mitchell Trubisky. But as I sit here at 3:25 a.m., I got the column done a little early this week. As I sit here at 3:25 a.m., If I wasn't so tired, I'd be watching a few more highlight packages right now. But in a week like this where I go somewhere and go cover a game, it's just difficult for me to see all the other games. But anyway, hope you enjoy the column today. And let's start off with the lead to Football Morning in America, October 21. Dateline Atlanta. It should be obvious now, as the Rams feel the slings and arrows from around the league for gorging on the present at the expense of the future, what the identity of this franchise is. They completed three trades in an afternoon last week, for goodness sake, two involving Pro Bowl players. And I can tell you it's not about the PSLs or filling the new stadium next year or knee-jerking a response to a three-game losing streak. It's about the personalities of the people who lead the team. And in a larger sense, it's about a sea change in how the new wave of general managers and team architects are approaching the sport right now. Last Tuesday, when GM Les Snead had completed two deals from his California office, acquiring offensive lineman Austin Corbett from Cleveland and trading cornerback Marcus Peters to Baltimore, he was working on a third. Snead and GM Dave Caldwell of Jacksonville were close to doing a mega trade for dissatisfied cornerback Jalen Ramsey of the Jaguars. In a Ritz-Carlton ballroom in Fort Lauderdale during the NFL's fall meeting, Rams owner Stan Kroenke and Rams chief operating officer Kevin Demoff awaited word on the deals. Around 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Snead and football VP Tony Pastores both pinged Demoff with details of the first two trades. Demoff showed Kroenke the news. Not a bad afternoon's work for Snead and his staff. Not enough. Kroenke didn't pump a fist. It's not his way anyway. Instead, he asked Demoff about the unhappy Jaguar. He wondered, is the Ramsey deal still in play? It was, and within an hour, that one was done too. Ramsey for the Rams' first-round pick in 2020 and first- and fourth-round picks in 2021. Even though LA is buying Ramsey for only the remaining 1.5 seasons of his rookie contract, the Rams are optimistic about signing him long-term, but have no guarantee of employing Ramsey beyond the expiration of his contract in 14 months. Three trades in 5 hours. Now it was Saturday in the bar of the team's Buckhead Hotel, the day before Rams-Falcons, and Demoff and Snead dissected what the team had done and what it meant. As Demoff said, "This is who we are. This is what we do. This is our belief as an organization. Stan isn't fearful. Les isn't fearful. And Sean," meaning Coach Sean McVay, "isn't fearful. The league is so fast moving. It hasn't been this way forever for us, but now we're going to value the great player over the potential of a draft choice." For a guy who'd been on the team for only 4 days, Ramsey didn't seem like much of a newcomer in the 37-10 rout of the pathetic Falcons. He didn't give the full Jalen, but it was close. He didn't start. He came in early in dime packages only, where he could match up against Julio Jones, mostly in bump coverage in the left slot or wide right or right slot. He did play in the regular scheme later, and it appeared he played 6 or 7 snaps in the Rams zone coverage. In all, after two practices, he played 36 of the Rams' 53 defensive snaps. He was not a shutdown corner. In coverage snaps against Jones, he allowed 4 catches for 69 yards. He used a jarring hit on Devontae Freeman to force a fumble that the Rams should have recovered, but lost in a scrum. Ramsey also demonstrated why he's a cornerback so many receivers love to hate. On 6 different occasions, he yapped full-throated at Jones. It's a wonder with the blizzard of flags in the league right now why Ramsey didn't get one for taunting or berating Julio Jones. Ramsey's the classic case of a guy you hate when your team plays him, but you like his results when he's on your side. I talk shit every game, said Ramsey, matter-of-factly and unapologetically, in a short madhouse locker room scrum after the game. In the upset of the week, his back seemed just fine. When this was still a game in the second quarter, in an eight-play sequence, Jones beat Ramsey twice for significant plays. First, a quick slant from right to left for 17 yards when Jones got inside Ramsey and sprinted toward the middle with a full stride on him. Then, a simple go route down the right sideline, gain of 39. Jones simply outraced Ramsey. So Jones didn't torture Ramsey. Overall, he got the better of him, but it was a good contest. If I was really in my groove, like on my shit, it would really be scary out there, Ramsey said. Good for Ramsey in not bragging about his game, because it was a decent performance, that's it. But maybe that's to be expected after 3 weeks off with an injury no one in Jacksonville believed was an injury. I feel like I played okay, he said. I've got to get in my groove a little bit more. There's maybe one, maybe two plays I wanted to have back or play a little bit different. For a game, at least, all was right with the Rams. After losing three straight, this was a good week for a star jolt and for a soft underbelly of the schedule. The Rams will stay in Atlanta to practice this week before overnighting to London on Thursday evening, then playing the Bengals at Wembley Stadium Sunday. Combined Falcons-Bengals record, -1-13. There's enough in what the Rams are doing for a book about how modern football is changing. I don't have time for a book, so let's do Cliff's Notes. The Rams are not alone in bulking up on trades. Cleveland, Baltimore, Oakland, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh are dipping their toes in the pool more than they used to, or more than their predecessors. This could be an outlier season regarding trades, but I doubt it. With 8 days to go before the deadline, see how times have changed in 10 years. 2009, 39 trades in the calendar year involving 50 players. Seven of those were Pro Bowlers at least once. 2019, 54 trades with 8 days left in the trading period involving 69 players. 13 of them have been to at least one Pro Bowl. That's a snapshot, not a long-term study, but it just feels like trading has picked up. And though the Rams may be at the head of the pack, they're not alone. One GM told me over the weekend when I relayed those trading stats, I bet that number ends up at 65. I've been thinking about it, said Hall of Fame GM Bill Polian, and I want to withhold final judgment, but there are a few factors. Miami's getting rid of players. The Rams are aggressive. And I think players with leverage, they see this as being the NBA. I'll go where I want to go. Ramsey, Antonio Brown, trade me, and the hell with the consequences. But there's also a little bit of the old Branch Rickey in some of the newer GMs. Rickey said the only title you can win is the title you can win this year. Polian then made a fascinating point. He said he didn't want to be a curbstone psychologist, but he said, I think this generation of GMs might be a little bit more transactional. It used to be that not many GMs thought about taking risks. They were from a generation where their parents might have grown up in the Depression or remembered the Depression. Life was hard enough without taking risks. Today, the idea that you can make those decisions and change your team quickly is inculcated in this generation. I'm not sure of that, but it seems to be true. Personally, I love that theory. I think it's dead on. Why wait to fix a problem when you might get fired after 2 years? When I told Demoff and Snead, they were fascinated. Bill makes a great point about our league now, said Snead, and the trade data backs it up. It's not just us. Bill Belichick is great at it, too. When they have a hole, he doesn't wait. He attacks. He trades. He takes chances, too. Demoff pounce next. The NBA is coming to the NFL. This trade is a similar case to those NBA deals. And I go on maybe for about 1,000 more words. You can read it in my column today. But not just a look at the Rams, but a look at the rest of the NFL and how much trading is actually going on. Then I go into some other things I saw in week 7 or observed and saw highlights of. One, the Chicago offense is a 4-alarm fire. I encourage Coach Matt Nagy to strongly consider benching Mitchell Trubisky for Chase Daniel. Not that Daniel is necessarily superior, but I just think the Bears next week have the Chargers at home, and I just think sending Mitchell Trubisky out to take the boos and the slings and arrows of that crowd potentially could be hurtful for him long term. I have a little section about the MVP, and I have no idea who it would be right now, especially because Patrick Mahomes might now only play 12 full games. But I would put these three players at the head of the class: Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, and Lamar Jackson. And as I write, the Jackson candidacy could get quite intriguing. He's on pace to rush for 1,317 yards, which of course is insane. And he's on pace to have a passer rating of 94.1. Imagine rushing for more yards than Alvin Kamara with a better passer rating than Carson Wentz. There's plenty of season left, thankfully, for the 50 voters of this award. I write a section about Buffalo and their how much they struggled on Sunday. I wrote a section about the Cincinnati Bengals at 0-7, and I make this point. Just imagine, look at the Bengals' schedule leading up to Week 16. In Week 16, they'll play Miami. So just imagine this golden game, December 22 in South Florida. Imagine Cincinnati 0-14 at Miami 0-14. It could happen. I talk a little bit about Patrick Mahomes. Adam Schefter reported on Sunday that he may be out only 3 weeks or less. So you don't know. He might only miss 2 games. He might miss a third. We'll see. Andy Reid gave him tremendous credit for walking off the field the other night instead of being carted off. Thought it was very tough. Players on the team reacted accordingly. I have a section about Teddy Bridgewater, who I just have so much admiration for. You know, he struggled in his first 2 wins since replacing Breeze, but in the last 3, he's got a 108.3 passer rating. He's putting up 27 points a game. It's really, really a tribute to Bridgewater that he has been able to be this good in his first 5 weeks playing, you know, a lot in a long time. You know, my awards section, my favorite award was Defensive Player of the Week, Marcus Peters, in his first game with Baltimore. It's funny what happened to Peters. On Wednesday, he flew cross-country from L.A. to Baltimore. On Friday, he flew back across the country from Baltimore to Seattle. And then Sunday, late afternoon, early evening, he got back on the plane and flew across the country again from Seattle to Baltimore, going home from the game. So I wouldn't blame Marcus Peters, who had an interception return for a touchdown against Russell Wilson. I wouldn't blame Marcus Peters if he wants to take a pretty good nap today. Just a couple of other things I want to mention to you. I wrote the profile this week about Sam Ponder. Read her words. They're very, very interesting. About how sometimes we just overrate people in all walks of life. And they're people with the same problems that we have. And Sam Ponder really voices that well. I ran into Sam, obviously succeeded Chris Berman as host of Sunday Countdown for ESPN. But she was honored by a group I'm associated with, Right on Sports in New Jersey. And we honored her the other day as a literacy champion. Right on Sports is a very interesting organization. It takes kids at the middle school level who might normally not get much attention paid to them when they are writing and reading. And, you know, the founder of this organization 14 years ago, Byron Yake, a former AP sports editor, you know, has found that if you devote time to kids in an avenue that they really like, most kids like sports. So if you devote time to them, they're going to try harder if they're doing something they love. It's a cool concept, and we think it's worked. But anyway, read Sam Ponder's words in the column this morning. In my factoidness section, I write about John Elway and his everlasting search for a quarterback. In my NFL century, I talk about how it was Khalil Mack and not Brock Osweiler who ended up on the cover of Sports Illustrated. The only week that I had anything to do with the cover of Sports Illustrated, when Chris Stone, the managing editor, gave us at the MMQB the opportunity to put a magazine together in opening week of the NFL season in 2016. It's just a cute little story. I run a lot of letters this week, in part because I asked for letters last week to talk about sort of the coarsening of America, in the last two or three years. Because last week I wrote, and some of you will cringe at this, but, you know, I wrote that, Donald Trump has bullied a lot of kids, and or not a lot of kids, but a lot of adults, and I just wondered how it was, siphoning down to the schools in America with the teachers. So a couple of good stories about that. And finally, just a lot of the things I wrote about, I fell in love with the baseball playoffs this year. It's really, really cool. It's so interesting to me that what has happened in the baseball playoffs is that really the game is changing a lot. And the game is changing so that, honestly, these relief pitchers and these games where there are, 6 or 8 relief pitchers and there's not a starter, it's pretty, it's really pretty shocking. But anyway, I kind of enjoyed that, writing a little bit about baseball. So that was fun. And finally, my adieu haiku. Mitchell Trubisky, don't read the Sun-Times this week, or maybe ever. And that's my Football Morning in America mini podcast for week 7 of the NFL season. Hope you've enjoyed it. As always, if you have ideas, comments, please write to me at PeterKingFMIA@gmail.com or hit me on Twitter at Peter_King. Have a great week, everybody.